Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, dear to be different. My name is Ismail Ria. We're just wonderful to have all of you tuning in with us via the audio stream, medium wave 15480 Satellite Islam. And it's just been a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Lots of cloud cover in our parts of the world. We've had lovely rain the last couple of days. And not too sure the drought has been broken because lots of been widespread rain throughout the country. I saw some devastation in the Kruger National Park and so forth, but we need more rain to break the devastating drought that we've had. And we've learned lots of lessons during this period of drought. Lots of us have come up and said, look, fine, we can do lots of things to save water, and I hope that continues. It's not just that it's a gut reaction, but something that we should be doing continuously. And we've got a wonderful guest this morning, and that's Kerry Goodwin. She's going to share so much information with us. Kerry, as I said in the past, comes from a family who's involved in the world of horticulture, comes following lots of trends, and Ted is going to help us along this morning. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Good morning, and how are you?
Very well, thank you. And I was talking about the rains. I said lots and lots, in fact, buckets loads of rains and flash floods in certain parts of the country. And also, we've had some devastation. We've had loss of lives. And they said that in the Kruger National, you know, we've had lots of upheavals. Your comment on that, Kerry?
I think luckily we're in the Johannesburg area. I hadn't noticed as many flash floods, although I noticed all the rivers filling up. And the rains this time seem to be far more penetrating and beneficial to the earth than that wash of rain that we get. You know, when we had those sudden cloud bursts and everything just got washed away, whereas the rain this last week seemed to be very slow and steady. So I think there was this build-up and build-up. But I know in some areas, I mean, at the one nursery, we had 40 mils in an hour. I'm like, oh, my goodness. But it's just, I think we so desperately needed the rain that, you know, all the water that we, it's just really filling up the earth, and that's what we needed. We needed to replenish. And I think the plants are very grateful for it.
You know, speaking about the earth being replenished, I think that is so important. And we've had all this copious amounts of rain. Do you think it would be a delayed summer garden, you know, looking around, because the earth is, you know, sort of nice and soaked, the plants have gotten enough water, and we saw lots of plants still blooming. Do you think that would be, and is that good to have a delayed or an extended summer garden?
I think it's a wonderful opportunity. I think those summer plants have, you know, we've had a little bit of rain on and off those last 3 months. So they've just been getting there, and now they're actually looking amazing. So I think people must enjoy their summer garden. There's such amazing plants out there. We had a garden industry show on Wednesday, and when I was just looking at all the plants, I just thought, wow, we are so fortunate because of the rain that we've been having. The plants are saying, oh, thank you, because there's nothing like rainwater. It doesn't matter if you've been using your bath water or your kitchen sink water to water the plants. Rainwater has special elements in it, I think, that just nourish the plants as well as giving them a source of water. And they really are looking good now. They're jumping up, you know, the New Guinean patients are jumping up and saying, look at me, I can grow. I don't have to hold my roots tight in the soil. And even the begonias are looking good. You know, often in the summertime we complain that begonias start looking a bit moldy and because of all the rain we've had, whereas now they've had just the right amount of rain. So they're actually looking up at you and saying, you know, I can flower now. And so people must really enjoy this summer period, which we normally would have in January, February, and now we're going to experience it instead in March and April.
Now, speaking about this, you know, delayed summer or belated summer, whatever you want to call it, because whilst we've had, you know, extremities of temperature, and the temperatures at the moment are still quite high, we still have them, you know, quite high. Listen to temperatures yesterday, was in the upper 20s, 29, 28. Normally by this time of the year, you know, you can see the, you know, earth cooling down, and you can, you know, get the, and you can feel and see the transition, you know, that we are now losing our plants and we're now going to a cooler climate and a cooler, you know, sort of day and shorter days. Now, with all of that being evident, do you think it's going to delay the process in preparing perhaps a winter garden?
I think it's going to be a slower process, but I think winter will come a bit faster. So I went to have a look at the temperatures to see, you know, the May temperatures in June, and it looks like we're going to drop, you know, slowly from now we'll stick in the high 20s, still 30s for March, and then in April it will drop to the high 20s again, and then by May we'll start dropping to the mid 20s. So it's not going to be a, when I say frosted, luckily it doesn't seem that we get any minus temperatures until June. So I'm like, oh, thank goodness for that, because, you know, you really want the plants to be able to enjoy themselves and to be of the benefit that they can be, because I think that's what plants are for. You know, their job is also to make you happy and to produce seed. And if they have a horrible growing season, then they're not able to do their job either. So it does look like that the climate is going to slowly change. But when I have a look around, I mean, you know how you look for the autumn leaves that should be falling and that type of thing. And I haven't seen any of that yet. They're slowly starting, you know, some of the Celtis africana, their leaves are slowly starting to go yellow on the edges, which is the first sign that maybe autumn is coming. But I think it's still a few weeks off at least.
Well, you know, I must say, too, I'd be grateful for the extra, you know, with the warmer temperatures still with us, because once it becomes colder, it's quite a challenge for many of us. You know, we find that it's very difficult. Now, having said all of that, you know, we now getting into cold, not yet, but around about, you said June. Do you think the El Nino has been broken, you know, the back of the El Nino? Do you think that's still going to be with us?
I was speaking to some people this weekend, and even when I was driving around and I looked at the newspaper headlines, it doesn't look like that it's been broken. I think, sadly, our rain has come a little bit too late to rescue what should have been the growing season. When you spoke about Kruger Park, I was there probably about 2 weeks ago, and in some parts of it, there was just no grass. So even if the rain did come now, it's just going to cause wash-off. There wasn't any grass to be seeded to be able to provide food for the animals. And I think that's what we have lost. So I think, yeah, in terms of, like, food production and being able for some of the natural plants to have go through their whole life cycle, that's going to be the challenge. The El Nino itself, oh, goodness, that's a difficult one. I'm never very good at predicting the weather, I have to admit.
I must say to you, I think no one, even the weatherman hasn't been able to get dry this time. Definitely not. They say no rain, you have the rain. They say no, you know, temperature, and the next thing you know, it's sweltering. I'm saying nobody's been able to get it right.
Yeah, I think you actually have to watch the environment in which you live. And that's probably your best guide. You know, when the swallows are flying low, then you know there's going to be rain. And the fact that the swallows and quite a lot of our birds, which normally migrate, are still around, actually means that they're actually still enjoying our summer, and they haven't started their migratory pattern just yet. So I think that's what you have to look at in terms of the, you know, once they're trying to tell the weather. Because I think animals and even plants as such have a built-in system that they almost know what's coming and they can prepare themselves.
You know, it's so true. Sorry about that, Carrie. I think devastation that we've had in Asia, they said that the first indicators were the animals. You know, what was that? I'm just trying to think, slip of my mind.
Yeah, it wasn't it when all the animals moved to the highlands?
That's correct.
Yes,
the tsunamis. And they say those are the animals are the first indicators. They seem to understand that better than men. And, you know, they have that sixth sense, and they seem to know what's happening. Just about that again, we've had abundance, and we have lots of people calling about the ants. And you spoke about ants last week, and I know said, you know, that they seem to understand or know that when there's going to be lots of rain. So we've had, and everybody's been trying all sort of remedies to say, well, fine, our homes are being infested, our kitchens, you know, you just name it, every part, and everybody's saying, what do you do? And I hear people, you know, saying, well, try some borax and try some icing sugar, try some of this, try some. But they say they just seem to move at home. Is that true, Carrie? Have you found the same thing with the ants?
I was going to say it does seem that ants are infesting everywhere. And there's lots of different products for ants and how they work differently. You know, one product that I tried, which at first was a bit slow to act, was the ant insect granule. And you scatter it around it like little breadcrumbs for ants. And then, but I expected it to work in 24 hours, which it didn't quite, but it worked in 36. In 36, I had no ants left anywhere. And what they do is they take these little granules down to their nest, and it releases the gas in their nest, and then it kills them. And actually, that helped a lot to keep the ants away for at least a month. They kind of disappeared. and I see now the time is to start scattering it again. But otherwise, you get wonderful sprays as well that you could use to get rid of the ants. I also think they're part of our environment, and obviously you don't want them in your house. So like you were saying, you can get the chalk, which you could put on certain, like around your dog's bowls or around certain areas which the ants don't cross over. And that also helps keep them away. But we do actually want them in our environment because they're really good at moving and decomposing matter. You know, they're helping that process of decomposition, which helps make compost, which, you know, improves the enrichment of our soil. So, you know, try and keep them out your house by using, as I say, there's so many various products. And I think they all have different effects and work in different ways. I mean, before I started using these ant nest granules, I was actually just using water and a spray bottle. And I would just spray them. And then I thought, this is actually quite cool. I'm just drowning these ants. So then I went back to something a little bit more, slightly more toxic, but at least it, you know, it poisons them far away from actually inside my kitchen or somewhere.
You know, the question that I think many people pose is that how devastating are they? You know, do they have a positive, impact? And I think we spoke about the positive impact that they have in our gardens. So whilst ants, you know, maybe we find them as nuisances, that's the word I could use, that when they're in your homes, you find it's a bit of a nuisance. But at the outset, I think, you know, they have such a wonderful role to play, and we've got to understand that they also have a space that they occupy, a very meaningful and a very wholesome space, and we've got to understand that and appreciate that.
I think that's what it is, especially, you know, in the gardens, they don't do any harm to any of our plants. Actually, they're almost like an indicator species, because often if you see ants in your garden, and it's not because they're nesting or something, if you see them on your plant, it's actually a sign that you have aphids. And so they're attracted to the honeydew that is secreted by the aphids. So then they're indicating to you, you know, actually your plants are being eaten by the aphids, and so you need to use something to get rid of the aphids. So apart from helping with the decomposition, is that they're actually, in their aeration of the soil, is they are an indicator species. And in your garden, I actually think they play a vital role. And I wouldn't try and get rid of them in your gardens at all.
And then, you know, you spoke about, you know, animals being indicators of nature and environment and so forth, and we spoke about the tsunami. But, and as you indicated, that, you know, birds and their nests and so forth are also good indicators of the type of weather patterns that we're going to have. And like you said, if the swallows are flying low or if the birds' nests are lower or higher, those are indicators. And somebody said that, and I think you've also mentioned it, that when you find an abundance of ants, it means there's going to be lots of rain. Is that right?
It is right, actually. The ants, and I think that's what it is why we've seen them closer and closer to our home, is they know that the rain is coming, and so they're actually trying to find somewhere dry to protect themselves. And so you even find them under, I've got stepping stones in my garden, and when I go and lift the stepping stones, then I can see that they're trying to, you know, make their nest under the stepping stone, so at least it's going to be protected and stay a little bit drier than if it was on open soil or in the garden itself. So, yeah, that's why they're coming into your home. So, actually, when you do see them there, it's like, oh, yeah, it's going to be raining too.
So there's a good indication. Sometimes, you know, that we've got to learn to understand, and like we said, work with the nature, not against nature. So if you work with nature, you'll have a more positive impact, and you yourself will be able to understand what has to be done and how things have to be, you know, or what care should be taken. I think those are important indicators.
I think that is. And, you know, it's because we're all part of the cycle. So you actually have to be part of it, and we almost have to step away from our lives as being separate and thinking that we, you know, we can control everything. I mean, I know we love to control everything. It's one of the joys. And we can to a certain extent, but at the same time, it's amazing to be part of that cycle and just see how you can fit in with what's around you, you know, and how you can learn from them. And that's what I like the most. I love the fact that my alarm clock doesn't wake me up in the morning. The birds do, maybe a little bit earlier than I expect them to. But I just think, you know, that's joyous that I can listen to the birds early in the morning and they're like saying, okay, it's time to get up. The sun is rising. Oh, goodness gracious, okay. You know.
Yeah, well, I think they have a meaningful role to play, and I think that's what we need to understand. Gary, you know, you spoke about the garden industry having a meeting on Wednesday. What were the trends? Would you pick up any trends there? Was there something that you saw that was spectacular, something that was different, something that we should be looking out for?
You know what I think is really becoming a trend, and it also shows how we our lifestyles are changing and our homes are changing, is there's a lot more creeping plants and the use of climbers within our gardens. So, and even how, you know, people are putting their climbers onto different bamboo stakes or things that make them look interesting. But also we have it a lot in the nursery with people who live in flats or live in, you know, their homes are going up and up. And we have a thing where they don't want to talk to their neighbors. They want to hide from their neighbors. So they keep looking for bigger and bigger, faster growing plants that are either going to form a hedge or, as I say, and just keep them, hide them from their neighbors. And I saw lovely ideas of how you could use climbers to almost become like a fence. And I thought that was fantastic because they're such beautiful plants. They seem to flower a lot more prolifically than some of our hedging plants. And they're just a little bit softer, so they're not creating this harsh, wooden exposed, you know, I don't want to talk to my neighbor type of fence. They're creating a beautiful green like the gelsinium, where it's really well with yellow flowers. And then it will just climb up a wire, and then the wires are put quite close together, and then it forms, as I say, this beautiful wall of green and gold, you could say. And then it doesn't feel as so much that you don't want to talk to your neighbor. It's just like a little bit of a barrier to add some privacy to our lives.
I think that's, that sounds very interesting. Were there any other trends besides climbers, you know? Did you pick up anything else that we think you should be looking out for?
I'm just trying to think in terms of all the different gardening ideas. The other one that I'm really quite liking, and especially at this time of the year, it is quite an amazing thing, is the use of different grasses. So you just have this, you know, a lot of the penicetum are looking good, and they're indigenous and exotic grasses, and they add different textures to your garden. So if it's a smaller garden, luckily most of them are water-wise as well. But you just have the little seed heads, which are obviously providing food for the birds at this time, so it's attracting wildlife to your garden. But then because of the softness of a grass, it creates a depth and an impression, a whimsical idea. So there were some beautiful, beautiful different grasses, and then the combination of your softer, I want to almost say like felt grasses, and then your harder grasses, which we haven't seen for a long time, like your cordylines and your, you know, my mom and dad used to call them flax. Yeah, you know, we haven't seen those for like a long time, but a lot of people are now starting to put them in containers. And some of the cordylines we've even, they've been bred to be a little bit softer, so they flow like a fountain. So we have one that's actually called Red Fountain. And then we have another one that's called, it's a penicetum, and it's called Fireworks. You know, and it's got red with green in it, and then a beautiful seed head that looks like it's an explosion of fireworks. And so these things that almost have two different textures on one plant, so whether you put them by themselves in a container, and that container is a focal point, and it says, look at me, I'm pretty amazing, and I have these different colors, or you're combining them together to give like a 3D effect or 4D effect in your garden. So I think it's really lovely to be able to use the different grasses to create a feeling of, I want to say like expansion or endlessness, especially if you do have a bigger garden, or if you plant them correctly in a smaller garden, it could work as well. So there was definitely that trend of looking for the different grasses.
I must say, you know, I was just sort of conjuring this whole thing in my mind when you were speaking about the cordylines, and you spoke about the different, the red fountain, the fireworks and so forth. And I think, you know, that will bring a wow factor in any garden, because you come in, and if you have just one, or you have them in threes, I can imagine, you know, you just have it, and it's such a focal point, and you have a contrasting pot. I think it will just make a wow factor in any garden or any small space that you have, and you don't have lots of space. I think it's something that we should be watching out for. Now, just on that point, sorry, would it be able to be done indoor, you know, the indoor-outdoor story about the patio and so forth, would it do well on that, in that environment?
I think what I'm seeing a lot of people doing with indoor plants, or outdoor, vice versa, is that they put them inside for a short period of time. So if you have a very, like a skylight or a very sunny spot within your garden, in your home, like a kitchen or, you know, dining room, you would be able to use a grass there for a period of time, but probably only about 6 weeks, and then it would actually have to go outside. But a lot of people are starting to use living plants instead of cut flowers. And then it almost has a dual function. It's like the same as the gerbera. You know, the gerbera to me is one of the most beautiful plants, and I like to keep mine indoors for the first, they normally last at least a month or 6 weeks inside. And then I go and take them outside into the garden, and they look terrible at first, but then they recover, and in a nice full sunny place, they just seem to do really well in your garden as well. And I think that's the benefit of using outdoor plants as indoors, but as I say, just for a short period, because they're not, you know, they're not ideally suited. That isn't their purpose for being. But they can make very attractive part of your home, or even, you know, for some of the grasses, what a lot of people are doing is cutting the grasses, which the grasses don't mind at all, and using them in their vases. So then you're adding a different texture to your flowers, or maybe to your roses, or a flower arrangement, but you've got still got the beautiful grass outside as well. So it's a continuation or symmetry between your inside and your outside.
Yeah, those are sorts of interesting, these are definitely interesting trends and ideas that one could implement almost immediately. And I'm looking at some of the grasses that we have been neglected and have come back. It's been fashionable again. It seems to be going in and out. And I'm not too sure if we really appreciate the grasses, because there's so many, you know, the variation in grasses in terms of textures, colors. And you could just do a stunning small piece in your own garden. You take a number of grasses and varying heights, varying colors, varying textures. I think it would just be a fantastic display.
And I think, as you say, the varying height part is quite important. If you get the golden ones, like a Chorus Mini Gold and Evergreen and a Carex Honeybird, and they're variegated ones. And they actually can do pretty well in the shade, so they add a different color in your shade, because often, you know, your shade plants tend to be more green, and then you look for flowers to add color. So here you've got a grass which is permanently around, and it will add a streak of yellow, or one of the ones that we have on the market at the moment is called Pure Blonde, and it almost looks like a white grass.
Okay, that's interesting. And, you know, there's so many other things that we can do with our own indigenous plants. Gary, we'll continue the conversation after the news. We're going to break.
Wonderful.
And then we'll come back and talk about our winter garden. Take care.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It's Dare to Be Different. My name is Mal Briava. It's wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming Midway 1548 in Satellite Islam. Some of you still curled up in bed, others having breakfast, and maybe some more adventures have already gone out into the garden. Muhammad is shaking his head and said, I wonder who's gone out into the garden so early this morning. Yes, but lots of people would have gone out already and have done lots of things. So we do have the adventures one, and online we have Caroline, Carrie, good one. I do apologize that. And Carrie's on good line. Carrie, you have a good chuckle. You know, Muhammad always laughed when I said the adventures went out in the garden at this time of the morning. Others curled up for breakfast. Others having breakfast.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm one of those ones who's been out in the garden already, checking what I can find, how my plants are growing.
Well, you know, Muhammad shakes his head and says, well, I don't know. You guys seem to be belonging to another planet. I said, Muhammad, if you only know the joys.
Absolutely. I think that's what it is once you've got your hands in the soil, it's just kind of addictive, and you can't help yourself. You just want to go and see what's going on and what, you know, especially if you've, like, planted seeds. And you're trying to see if they're germinating yet. And so, and even your plants, you're trying to see what's happening. Have they changed? Oh, no, I just love it. it might be another planet, but I love it. It's going to be my mission.
And then, you know, dirtying your hands. What about dirtying your hands? And Muhammad looks at it and says, well, can't be a really good garden dirty the hands. Yes, you can. Yes, Carrie, thank you very much for that one.
I find with the, especially, you know, the dirtying of your hand part is actually to feel the soil. I understand when you're pruning roses, and one of the guys that I worked with the other day, he said, you know, he really needs to get a pair of leather gloves to protect his hands when he's busy cutting the hedges in the garden centers. And I'm like, oh, okay, no, that's fine. But there's nothing better than actually feeling the soil, because you get to feel what your plants might be growing through. So where I live, I have very clay soil. So I'm thinking, sure, these poor roots trying to grow through this, which makes me think, no, I need to add lots of organic matter to make it better and easier for the plants to grow through and attract all those ants that we're going to be chasing out our homes. So I think you need to get your hands dirty, put your hands in the soil and just feel the texture of the soil. And then you'll realize oh, it's a good soil or it's not a good soil, or it's too sandy and the water is just going to wash through it, and how is it going to hold any water or nutrients for my plant?
I think that's so true. That's so true. And, you know, many of us are saying, well, fine, what is it? You know, we're not going to do it. Let somebody else do it. And I think the joy is doing it yourself.
Yeah, I was going to say the hard work. Like when I was trying to garden at home, I couldn't even get the pick through my soil. And I'm pretty strong. So then I had to call in for some help. And then once I had loosened the soil as well, then I still managed to get my pick a little bit, maybe 10 centimeters where the guys got it at least 20 to 30 centimeters deep. So you can call in for help, but you have to, as you say, just try and do a little bit yourself. And that's where your passion comes in. It's through trial and error. And you'll get to see what you love and what you don't love.
I think that's very true, and it grows on. And if you have young children and you have young people coming at an early age, some of that grows with them, and you find that maybe they lose interest for a while, but it would come back. It definitely would come back because they've seen the joys and they've seen and they've been able to, you know, visualize and, you know, work with it. And later on, I find that when there's a period in life where they perhaps don't want to do these things, and then come back one day when they have their own homes and so forth, you find they come back again.
Yes. I was going to say, I was so privileged last week. I was looking after my brother's children, and we were gardening. And I have, you know, the worm wee and the bokashi bins and everything, and there was the worms had created wee and fluid. And so my little niece, she was so excited to drain this worm wee and then mix it in with some water, and we were fertilizing the garden. And the fact that it had come from all my kitchen waste, her eyes just got, she's like, oh, did the worms make all of this for you? And I was like, yes. And we opened it up and we saw the worms. So it is, it creates a whole different aspect to their growing up. And as I said, they really enjoyed it. And the fact that you can make something beneficial from waste is actually, I think, what they also quite appreciated.
And I think we live a very artificial life. Many of us, you know, we buy things ready-made. We go out in the supermarket and we get things. So children never have that experimenting phase in their lives. They don't understand where things come from. And, you know, I've heard someone once ask a child, where do you get milk from? They said, we get from a supermarket. You know, that type of story. You know, that comes up. So they can't see the association. They can't see. And I think those are the things that we need to make children understand, give them those experiences, and let them, you know, see for themselves, try for themselves, dirty their hands, and you'll find they definitely will grow with that. Gary, we're going to continue with our conversation with the winter gardening. And if anyone would like to join our conversation, number to dial this morning, 854-1548, 854-1548, it's an open line. If you'd like to, any queries, any questions, please call. And we've got Gary to help us. Gary, now we're getting into the season where we hope that we're going to get, you know, the soil is going to definitely cool down or be cooler. What do you think we should be doing?
I was going to say, at the moment, you should be composting, you know, getting your soil ready for winter. Although I say this, I want to say half and half, because if your summer plants are still looking amazing, which hopefully they are, and the one plant that I forgot to mention earlier that I really think is looking incredible now are the roses. I mean, they should be almost in their last flush now before we might prune them, or even second last flush. But to me, they are looking amazing out there. And when we talk about kids and going out into the garden, they, you know, to go and smell them is always a joy. But if your garden is not looking fantastic at the moment, then the best thing to be doing now would be to try and add compost, whether it's compost from your own composting bin, whether you've gone to a garden center to go and get compost, is just to add organic matter to replenish the soil of the nutrients before winter, so that the plants, when you plant them now, they'll be energized from the beginning. You know, they'll be able to get all those nutrients from the first time that they put their roots into your soil. And then, yeah, then we're going to start the planting, which, oh, there's such lovely winter plants. I love winter and gardens. It's one of my favorite times to garden.
I must tell you, many of us say, well, fine, bye-bye gardening. We'll see you when spring comes again.
Oh, no, you can't do that. In winter, I just think, you know, because as you said, lots of people do that, and it just breaks my heart, because especially for the annuals, we have all the primulas, you know, that soft, fairy kind of garden. So if you've got a shady spot in your garden, whether you're planting the little seedlings or you're planting, seeds, you know, you could just scatter the seeds, it's just going to create a softness in winter that even if you're not out in your garden, the whites and the pinks and the purples will just illuminate your garden in the evening when you get home. And so I definitely think, you know, primulas in a shady spot in your garden would be incredible. And then for me, I love the pansies and the violas, and they love the cold. So as it starts getting colder and colder, they just do better and better and better. And I love these as well because, you know, the flowers are edible. So it's like dual function gardening, whereas you can put them in your veggie garden if you only have a little bit of space and they add a little bit of color. Or you can plant them in your flower bed somewhere where it's nice and sunny. And they just, they literally wake you up in the morning. You know, their smiling faces, they look up at you and say, good morning. And I'm like, yay, you guys are awake. You know, so I just think that, to me, winter gardening is fantastic. And there are so many, I know, you know, you have to appreciate the starkness of your trees that might have lost their leaves, so your deciduous trees. But there's lots of little things that you, and I think, you know, put spurts of color. You don't have to color your whole garden. But, and also what's really lovely in the winter, and I'll just mention it now, but it's still a little bit early, is also the aloes. You know, we've got some amazing aloes that have been hybridized for our Gauteng type gardens that can take the cold a little bit better than the indigenous aloes that we used to have. And those that attract, you know, they attract all the sunbirds to your garden. And, no, winter gardening, I'm just eager.
I can actually hear the enthusiasm.
Yeah.
I can actually hear it coming through. Kerry, you know, I was yesterday in the garden center, and what I did find was that, you know, there's still lots of summer. You know, they were still standing cucumber, you know, plants.
Yes.
And there was still, you know, there was the some of the herbs, the softer herbs. And I was wondering, should we still buy them? I mean, it's this time of the year. Do you think we'd have enough time for us to benefit from all of some of these, you know, plants that are now still on sale?
I think you actually would, because a lot of the time with your veggie gardens, you know, when you're buying them now, they're in full production, whether it be like your basil or your tomatoes, the cucumbers, they would be almost about to fruit if they're not fruiting already. So you still have at least another 6 weeks to enjoy them. And then with the fruit coming on, I think if it's not that you're not possible to able to eat it all, is to harvest it and then to keep it for the winter. So you have, you know, the pestos for your pasta in the winter and the tomatoes so you can make delicious tomato soup. So I don't think it would be a problem at all buying it. And, you know, especially with the drought that we've had, I think a lot of the fruit is, or herbs and things, are fruiting later. So you might have missed them, like the chilies at the moment. You know, they just seem to be going on and on and on. And then in the middle of winter, you'll be like, oh, I wish I could have a chili. Mm-hmm. And there'll be none. So if there's any way that you've bought them now and then you've either, as I enjoyed them up until, I think, you know, they should easily go up until May, first, second week of May or so, then enjoy them. And if you can't enjoy them, harvest the fruit and then put it into your freezer, and, you know, you could still use it in your cooking when you needed it at the time when you're craving it and you can't get it fresh.
I think that makes lots of sense. Now, we spoke about composting. Is that the only thing that we should be doing at this time, Kerry?
It is. You know, I want to say we're almost there in about 10 days' time, hopefully, especially with this rain now. Like you said at the beginning of the program, our soil's going to be a bit cooler, and then you could start your planting already. But at this time, it really is to just add compost. You know, if you're thinking of doing changes in your garden, if you wanted to add a new tree or a big shrub, it's an ideal time to dig a deep hole and start putting some soil into it. It's a lovely time to transplant and move plants as we go into this coolness of autumn. Because it's a little bit cooler and the plants have time to settle before the winter comes in, and then when they come into spring, they're ready for spring. So it's a really lovely time to look at your garden and think, oh, you know, that's grown too big there. Maybe I must move it to somewhere else. Or like my camellia, it isn't performing really nicely. Maybe it's getting too much sun and you want to move it to somewhere else. So it really is a lovely time to reevaluate your garden and see what changes you want to make within the next few weeks or so.
You know, you spoke about the primulas, pansies, violas, and so forth. Would it be a good idea to start planting them side by side with your summer, you know, plants, or should you wait for that to die off and then plant, or uproot your summer, you know, annuals and then plant them? What would be a good way?
My gut feeling at the moment is that the summer annuals are actually looking so good. So if you still have them in your garden and they're looking amazing, I would say rather leave them and wait until, you know, middle of April to then dig them up and plant your winter stuff. It's still really quite early for the winter stuff, especially with the temperatures that we've been having. You know, it's quite amazing that normally we have quite a few customers who've said, oh, you know, their primula started growing in January and February because we had a few cold spells. Whereas I haven't had any customers recently say to me, oh, their primulas are already self-seeded primulas and their gardens are growing. So I do think it's slightly early for our winter annuals, although they are readily available. And if your summer stuff didn't make it through the summer because of the drought and the water restrictions that we had, then it's an ideal time to go and plant, put in compost, and you could put your winter veggies in or your winter plants. But I wouldn't rush your summer annuals, or I wouldn't dig up beautiful-looking summer annuals to plant my winter ones yet. I would still enjoy them and then wait for your winter annuals.
Now, you know, this is an ideal time for all the brassicas, and many people may not enjoy them. You know, some people don't like eating Brussels sprouts and don't want to eat some of the cabbages and so forth. But we have a different, we have an alternative as well. You know, I've seen lots of the oriental veggies coming in. Take us through some of them, bok choy, you know, some of those, and tell us of its uses, because there's some amazing ones coming through.
I was going to say, there are lovely ones. And the one that works really nicely either as a salad or in the stir fry is the white-stemmed pak choy. So that's very similar to your spinach, you know, and as I say, if you stir fry in it or if you're eating it raw in your salad, it's got a very nice crispy taste.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that's one of my favorites, and I think we've spoken about it for a long time ago, was the red mustard.
Yes, that's
correct. Which is such a beautiful, you know, it's got a big leaf plant, but it's got a very nice tart taste to it. So that's a really good one. The mizu has got that fine textured leaf. So it almost looks, I want to say, like a fern in your salads. But it's also a very popular one. And I think what's wonderful with the oriental veggies is they each have a little bit of a crispness and distinct flavor. You know, often I love to eat lettuce, but it's just, it's all water and kind of leaves. And there's often not much just differentiation between the different types of lettuces. Whereas when you start going into your oriental veggies, each of them has a very distinct flavor or taste that adds a spiciness to your salad or your stir fry. And then, of course, a lot of people are using them in their smoothies. You know, to have those, they kind of bulk up your smoothies, whether it be the kale or the cabbage, or, you know, you're mixing it with something like apple, and then it actually is such a nutritious drink to have. So I think there's so much you can do with the oriental veggies, even and your brassica vegetables at this time of the year, that you should have them in your garden. You know, they just, and oh, they, the one thing that I really love is, and Life as a Garden recommended it, was actually planting your cabbage into a pot.
Yes, I saw that one.
Yes, yeah. So it's such a beautiful plant to grow into a pot.
And you get them in different colors, do you?
Yes, they come in the green and the purple. And now, I mean, different sizes as well. So you get the tiny little miniature ones, and then you still get your good old-fashioned drumhead. So I think there's quite a lot of different cabbages and even cauliflowers now. You know, you get a purple cauliflower, and then you still get the good old-fashioned white cauliflower, and you get an orange-colored one. So I think the growers have been really adventurous, and they're actually really trying to encourage people to eat, well, to grow their own veggies and then preferably to eat them. And so when you have a look around the garden centers, there's just such a huge variety that you could choose from now that you don't have to have, you know, the, I want to say, the normal veggies anymore. You could just, you're spoiled for choice. I find even, you know, when I go look around the garden center, I'm thinking, oh, goodness, what am I going to choose to plant for this season? And I often intermix, so I'll plant something and, you know, wait for it to grow the 6 weeks or 8 weeks of its life cycle, and then I'll plant something different. Because I think we definitely, a society, that likes change. You know, we're not one who, we don't stick for the same thing all the time. And so the more different our food and our palate is, our palates are used to experiencing different flavors now. And they almost expect it. So luckily the garden centers are catering for these now.
I think it's such wonderful, initiatives, incentives, you know, to encourage people to eat them and to grow them. Because I think, you know, in the old days, it was just always a cauliflower with a white head or a cabbage with, you know, it was all green. And now, you know, and I'm just thinking, you know, children would also be sort of enticed to eat them because it's different colors and looks so attractive. And to make them into, you know, a little bit, again, group them into three pots. So you have three different color cabbages or three different color cauliflowers. I think they're just wonderful, wonderful ideas. And thanks for sharing, Carrie. Now,
anytime.
The last, you know, question that's come through is with regards to citrus. We're now moving in and we've seen lots of citrus coming in onto the market already. Tell us about some key about citrus.
The best thing for your citrus at the moment is you should be feeding it. So preferably something like a 315, generous depending on, I would say, for every meter of height that your plant is above the ground, you should give a closed handful of 315. You know, scatter it in the bottom, mix it around in the hole. And then what's very important now during fruit formation is watering, but not constant watering, consistent watering. So it helps to develop lovely, juicy fruits. If you choose to water your plant every Monday, then you must water your plant every Monday. You mustn't water it on Monday and then on Wednesday and then think, oh, I haven't watered my plant 10 days later, let me water it on a Tuesday. And it seems strange that a plant would, I want to say, remember when you watered it. But to get that juicy fruit formation, is it likes to know that it's actually going to get water, and maybe it's 10 liters every Monday. And then you'll just see you'll get a really nice, delicious-tasting fruit. And if your fruit isn't delicious-tasting, or sometimes, you know, when you open a citrus and it's kind of, the pulp is a little bit dry, it means that your watering was a little bit haphazard. And so it wasn't able to form a delicious, juicy fruit.
Another question coming in. Someone says, I've been given a small citrus tree and it has never fruit. It never borne any fruit. Any idea what would have gone wrong? I've got it now for the last 5 years.
5 years is a long time. If they've fertilized it before, as I say, that 315 should really, really help with the fruit. It's just the potassium. So any fertilizer which the last number is high is what's going to promote your fruiting. Some garden centers might still have it. There was a product called Sudden Impact for Roses, and it was very high in potassium. So I would almost try and say if you could find anything that was high in potassium to try and feed the citrus, that would be very beneficial. And maybe just to repot it, maybe it's become a little bit root-bound in the pot, if it's in a pot and not in the ground. Those should be the two things that should really help it. And if it's getting enough sun. You know, if it was a smaller plant, maybe you've kept it on your patio and it's in a bit of shade, so it hasn't got that warmth to kind of encourage it to grow in fruit. So, you know, citrus really likes full sun. And that would be 5 hours, preferably in the afternoon of sun. So those would be the things that I would look at. And if all else fails, whatever soil it's in at the moment, maybe take a liter of it to one of our garden centers, or I think other garden centers as well, and maybe just get your soil tested to see if it is, there's something wrong with your soil, that maybe it's not absorbing the nutrients that it needs to absorb.
Well, thank you very much for all that information, Kerry. Thanks for sharing. It's been a wonderful morning. I've learned so much. Permulas, pansies, violas, that's definitely going to go up. And we spoke about the oriental veggies. I think we're looking for the bok choys and pak choys. I think lots and lots. I'm not too sure about the brassicas. I don't know how many people want to have brassicas. Well, let's try and get them out and eat them. If you can't, at least look at them. If you're not going to eat the cabbages and the cauliflowers, at least we'll be able to look at them and say, wow, they make a stunning display. But thank you very much.
Yes.
You take care, Carrie. Thanks.
Thank you very much for having me.
You take care. Thanks, Tom. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That
was Carrie Goodwin giving us some wonderful ideas, wonderful, you know, information, and wonderful to chat to, you know, lots and lots of, you can see the passion coming through, and that's what gardening is all about, to have a passion. That's all for me, and until we meet again, inshallah. Jazakumullah khair for tuning in. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.